Hi FM, 101.9 megahertz of life.
Good afternoon, Professor Shoup. How are you?
Good afternoon, Kathy. How are you doing?
Very well, thank you. I'm using hand sanitizer. I'm wearing my mask outdoors. I'm wearing glasses wherever I can. And I'm feeling neurotic in a healthy way.
I'm glad you've been listening.
Okay, so let's talk about corona parties.
Yeah, this is a bit of a crazy idea, but not a totally novel one. I actually mentioned it last week with Simon, but we never actually discussed it. But the idea is that to get young, healthy people together with an infected person. And the kind of aim of this is to get those people infected, the young people, who are not likely to get illness. We know that young people, when they are infected, either get asymptomatically or they get a very mild illness. And the hope is that when they recover, they will be immune and they will have what's called an immunity passport or certification of being immune. Also, the idea is really was part of a national policy. For example, in Sweden, Sweden decided to try and aim for herd immunity through natural immunity. Yes. Oh, we don't have a vaccine, so let's try and get natural immunity. So they didn't have any restrictions except for trying to protect the elderly and the vulnerable. And then when they actually analyzed the data, Sweden had more than 5,300 deaths. So they didn't really succeed, because you compare it to neighboring countries. Norway had 250, yeah. Denmark 600, Finland 325. And I think that the chief epidemiologist of Sweden has acknowledged that experiment was really a failure. And not only that, most of the deaths in Sweden were actually in the elderly.
Yeah.
The United Kingdom also tried to do that initially, but then they realized it's not going to work, and they also had a very high death toll as well. So really, this kind of thing, as I say, it's not new. It was a vogue, like, for example, with German measles or rubella. They also try and get somebody with rubella to infect young girls so that they would become immune. And they did with one or two other illnesses where the illness was not so severe, and the idea was to try and get immunity. With coronavirus, however, and really it's both stupid and it's dangerous, if I can be quite frank. It's stupid because really it's unlikely to get immunity in any kind of large extent. Now, the reason I'm saying that, there's done some recent studies where they looked at countries which had mature, very substantial epidemics. You look, for example, like Spain, where about only they had a mature epidemic, a large number of cases, but really only 5% really actually got infected. And when they've done immunity studies, also only 5% have shown immunity. So you really can't get herd immunity to any significant extent with a natural infection. And it's also dangerous because the young aren't invincible. We've seen a number of cases of severe infection in young individuals, and I think any of the clinicians will confirm this, that there are young people who don't have any comorbidity or don't have any overt comorbidities. The other thing is that, of course, there may be young people who might not know that they have and underlying comorbidities. So really, I think the bottom line is these coronavirus parties, and apparently there are some in South Africa as well, should really be heartily condemned. It is both dangerous and it's stupid.
So just a question, are you still there?
Yeah, I'm still there,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, just a question regarding how South Africans have been affected in terms of demographic versus, fatalities overseas and infections overseas. Is it following the same or is it affecting younger members of our population where it didn't really affect younger members of the population overseas?
Well, we have a younger age spectrum in our population, so it is affecting younger people. And this may be part of the answer why our case fatalities, there's a number of people who die of those who get infected, is pretty low. It's quite a lot lower than what was seen in Europe, very much lower than what was seen in Europe. It could be age, or of course it could be that mortalities are being underreported. That's another factor. But it's quite striking that our case fatalities are like about 1.6%. In the United Kingdom, it was about 12%, so it's markedly lower. And also, it may well be that we've got better treatment now. Now we're more advanced into the epidemic, so there are now more modalities of treatment. Some drugs are available also, not putting people on ventilators, et cetera, other forms of treatment are now evolving because we have time to kind of investigate those and to put them into practice. So that might also be a factor. The one thing which, of course, is a big question is the virus becoming weaker? Unfortunately, that's wishful thinking. There's no evidence of that.
I just keep seeing reports that it's mutating and that we probably, going forward, we might have to have vaccinations every year like we do for the flu, for the influenza virus.
It is what you call an RNA virus, a positive RNA virus. And RNA viruses do tend to be fairly genetically unstable. But so far, it hasn't shown the kind of degree of instability that we get with influenza. Influenza's got another reason why it's so unstable, which you don't see with coronavirus. So far, from an antigenic point of view, in other words, what elicits the immunity, that seems to be stable so far. And that's fortunate because if a vaccine is developed, one would want to kind of have it, you know, that the virus doesn't escape by mutation.
Very interesting. Can we talk about treatments tomorrow?
Monday.
Oh, sorry, Monday. Yes, Monday. Can we talk about treatments and the way that, coronavirus is being treated in hospital?
Yeah, for sure. Okay. We'll do that.
Thank you very much. Wish you a Shabbat Shalom and thank you so much for your time.
To you and the listeners.
Thank you so much.